2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
The MLB Daily Dispatch, brought to you by the good folks over at DFSArmy.com. Hey, if you're not signed up with us yet, make sure you do so. You can get a free day 7 trial by using the promo code OPENINGDAY. Do that on DFSArmy.com. You can get access to all the great things like our 24/7 Slack chat channel, all the prime things that we got going on for MLB, including the lineups page, the analytics corner with me and Burns. Yeah, that's right. You got to pay for my shit nowadays. It ain't coming for free anymore, folks. And, of course, all the wonderful tools that we got out there, the Domination Station for the Masters tournament that we got going on, the Domination Station for NBA, all that stuff. You get to try it out for free for 7 days. So use the promo code OPENINGDAY and you're in. Once again, that's all on DFSArmy.com, promo code OPENINGDAY. All right, so today is a little bit of a different episode that we got going on today. Joining me, as always, it's Keith Hall. You can find him on Twitter at BoomersDFSDaddy. But our presence is also graced by the one they call Chopadom. Chop, what is up, my man?
I'll just start off by saying you will never have to pay for my shit.
Ah, okay.
I'm always free, baby.
Oh, you're like a 10-cent hooker on a $2 street.
Yeah. And also,
that might even be overreaching it a little.
If you want to find Chop on Twitter, you do so at Chopodong. You can find me, Al Walsh, too, at 14a.walsh. But I'm glad to have you here. We thought we'd bring out all the heavy artillery today because it's going to be a different sort of episode that we got going on today. We're not going to go do the game-by-game breakdown. No NBA for this one either. This is just going to be a strictly answering questions sort of, I guess, a town hall meeting, if you will, where a lot of people are going to be able to, you know, get some of the questions out from MLB that they really, you know, don't know. And we will call them out by name, though, because it wouldn't be a town hall meeting if the questions were just from nobody's. You know, we gotta let the people know who's asking the questions, and then later on when they hear it, they could say, "Hey, that's a damn good question, Chris PLK 21." You know, yeah. But you know, it's been a pretty good couple opening days here for us at the MLB season. So believe me, we are all happy to do this. It kind of reteaches a couple things to us as well. And, you know, Keith always talks about this, just kind of breaking up the monotony where, you know, we get out of that game-by-game routine every day. I enjoy it, but I understand that some other people want some different things, and that's fine. But, I like doing all this stuff, too. I like helping the people. Now, everyone always said I would make for a good teacher, but I don't know if I could deal with kids for 7 hours a day, so.
Yeah, it's always a very, very interesting piece of information when I have to kind of temper myself because, like, baseball is my first love. Like, if my wife said, all right, you can't do anything else other than one DFS sport, it would probably by far be baseball. Just because I tilt the hardest. Because being a Rockies fan, and as we will find out later on this afternoon, you will find out what tilting in Coors Field is. I tilt the hardest, but it is by far my most enjoyable. I take a lot more pride and a lot more, not that I don't take pride in NBA, but I take a lot more enjoyment, personal enjoyment out of, you know, MLB. And I have to remind myself that the Army is growing, and that last year at this time we had a lot of people coming over from NBA, but we didn't have the sustained member ratio that we do this year, which is good, but we also have to I have to keep reminding myself that we need to integrate things slowly and teach people. So that's what we're going to do today. So you're going to get a kind of a tournament and a contrarian mindset with me. You're also going to get a cash game mindset with or concept with Chop. And then Al is going to be the referee, because I promise you there will be a point or two. And I haven't read the questions yet. I did that for I did that on purpose so you guys can get my full and reaction instead of me having to think about it. But I promise you there will be some arguments between me and Chop, because there always are.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying, but with, you know, being between you two idiots, I'm going to be the Joy Taylor, Molly Karam sort of individual of this podcast. And that'll be the closest that I ever get to either one of them without getting teased.
Don't even compare yourself to Molly Karam.
Man,
that's wrong on so many levels.
My eyes look wonderful in the right light, but this is a podcast, so nobody will ever know that.
Keith is currently Googling who Molly Karam is.
Are you kidding me? Jesus.
Q-E-R-M. I'm sorry, Q-E-R-I-M.
Yeah. He
Okay.
Found out who Christine Leahy was the other day.
I didn't know the last name, okay? I know who she is. I just didn't know the last name.
God, I've called my wife that last name before. Now, come on.
Yeah, okay, but you got to understand.
She thinks I'm saying that I care about them. I care them. I'm like, no, that's wrong. That's
I don't like First Take because I don't like Skip Bayless.
I can't stand that asshole.
Well, Skip Bayless is on the different show.
Yeah, but I don't watch First Take anymore.
So he doesn't like Skip Bayless. He once compared Skip Bayless to Colin
Kaepernick. So usually what
squirrel
when she's on TV, usually what I'm watching is MLB Central, Dan Patrick, you know, things
my attention, man.
I can glean things, but
anywho,
Kristen Lay. Oh.
Yeah, there's the winner. All right, let's get to some of these questions before we start getting off on a tangent, which we already did. As Chop mentioned, squirrel, that was the area that we were heading. So let's go to Chris PLK21, who I mentioned in the beginning. He's got the first question here. Can you guys dig in a little more on how to read the Vegas lines for one who does not know baseball? I feel like even after reading into it, I am still missing something. P.S. I may have an extra year of eligibility. I'll keep you guys posted. I don't know what that meant, but if we ever need an NCAA basketball team, we'll definitely call you. All right. What are we looking at here first?
Okay, so there's three parts of the Vegas lines in baseball that you've got to pay attention to, in my opinion. The first thing is the total. High total games, you want to target in MLB DFS your pitchers in low total games, your hitters in high total games, unless they just got a crazy crazy amount of strikeout upside. Then you know you can kind of give a little bit of leeway to the total as far as your pitchers is concerned. But those are guys like Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw. You know, the elite strikeout pitchers are the ones that you can give a little bit of that leeway to. The second part is the money line. And that's where, and we've talked about this before with, like basketball and football and stuff like this. This is just basically Vegas's confidence in, who's going to win. So to give you an idea today, we've got the Atlanta Braves, who are throwing Michael Fotinewicz, and the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are throwing Ivan Nova. Well, Ivan Nova and the Pirates are a -137 favorite, according to Vegas, which is great.
Which means?
It means he's basically the favorite to win.
It means you got to lay $137 to win $100.
I didn't know I didn't know where you were kind of going with that, so.
Yeah, that just explains it a little deeper. That way somebody can see that if you're laying $200 to win $100, it's a worse situation. It's a more sure thing in Vegas than if you have to lay $130 to win $100.
Yes.
You get a Kershaw slate with a -300. You got to lay $300 just to get $100 back. That means Vegas is saying this is kind of a lock.
Well, just to give you an idea, a line that I think that, you know, Vegas is a little weary of is the Scherzer line today, where he's only a minus 171 favorite against the Phillies.
Agreed.
That is a little bit, you know,
so
kind
you're
of
telling me there's a chance.
Well, yeah.
That's right.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, he still got that nagging finger injury, and he didn't pitch a lot of training.
It's telling us Vegas is less sure today than they usually would be. Because usually you see Scherzer with minus 200s, minus 250s. You know, this is a minus 150, which means that Vegas is a little unsure that he can beat even the Phillies. Yeah. Or that he's going to go long enough, get decision, or whatever the hell the factors that they have their number crunching gurus like deciding. It's just, it's telling us it's a good spot, but it's not a lock.
Exactly. Now the second part to that is the money line on the total. And the reason I say that is this is not every 8 run total is the same.
Correct. Love it.
You have to know where the juice is because, okay, like the Giants and the Padres, they have a total of 8 today, but so do the Braves and the Pirates. The difference is that Vegas has the juice on the under for the Braves and Pirates, and it's on the over for the Giants and Padres. So they are more confident that the Giants and Padres is going to go over that 8 run total than the Braves and Pirates, which they feel is going to go under the 8 run total.
Do you see when you look at the websites that you look at? Because Pinnacle. I typically look at, okay, I know that's where you go. I go to VegasInsider.com. When I see it, it'll say 8U minus 125.
Yes.
Do you see the same thing? Okay.
Well, no, it has over 8 and then below it, it has plus 107. And then under 8, minus 118. So it shows that, yes, but not kind of like in the same format as, you know.
Here's how I read it in my format when I see 8U minus 125. The U means the under is favored. And then the minus 125 is telling me the exact same thing the money line on the overall game is. It's telling me if I wanted to bet the under, I need to lay $125 to win back 100. So if I saw, and it never varies too far above and below the 100, because then the number just goes from 8 to 8.5 or 7.5, or it starts changing. But when you see that, it's just telling you which way Vegas is leaning, much like you were saying before. But it has a money line attached to it too on some sites. And that tells you how strongly, again, Vegas thinks it's going to go over or go under.
Yep. And now one of the highest totals that you'll ever see, you always ever see it. And I think they default it at this number every single day, to be completely honest, is when we get Coors Field on the slates. It defaults, I think, at 12. And then they adjust it from there. Now, 12 is a huge number, but there's reasonings behind it, obviously. It's no secret that Coors Field is the best hitter's ballpark in the majors. And there's a lot of reasoning behind that. So that is about the only total that I really don't pay a ton of attention to, because 95% of the season, that the juice is going to be on the over in that one, because Coors Field can go and okay, so any game can go for, you know, it can be an 11 to 12 game, but more often than not, if you had to put your money on it, it's going to be Coors over every other ballpark. Mm-hmm. So when that number goes off of a 12, if it goes down to an 11.5, depending on where the juice is, then I start to pay a little bit more attention as, okay, maybe possibly we need to go ahead and just X Coors Field off the slate, because it's not going to be as high. It's not going to be as high run scoring as the ownership is going to allow it to be profitable. And that's something else that we're going to, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's game theory, and that's an advanced concept,
but that's,
in my opinion.
That's going to be something that we're going to have to watch this year, is how on full slates, how players attack Coors mm-hmm. Field this year. But the second thing is like when it starts to go over like the 13.5 mark to 14, and they think that it's just going to be an absolute complete like home run derby and everything, I start to pay attention to that too, because if I'm not mistaken, that happened a couple times last year and it never even came close to the total.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you and I did a bunch of talking back and forth last year on Coors Field specifically, and we learned by just knocking heads together, we learned an awful lot by tracking players and how they're going. That's, in my opinion, that's another little side aspect of where guys inside the Army are going to benefit from that knowledge and that attention that we paid to it last year, because we've already got a leg up on the general audience, you know, in DFS baseball.
We basically on the podcast, we were spending, and I know this is getting off the tangent, but we were spending 5 minutes on Coors slates, and I would basically break it down for you and tell you, okay, is it worth it to play these guys or not? And right. I believe there were like 5 or 6 times that we said, no, fade Rockies hitters, load up on, you know, the opposing team and just the righties. Or, you know, we would give you specifics instead of just blindly stacking the Rockies and Coors Field every which way. We would give you specifics on where to attack. And it made us a lot of money. So
I want to talk about the reverse engineering of this too, because you could also use a lot of this to your benefit if you're a bettor. So, you know, if you take, I don't bet on games anymore. That's a lie, because the last one I did was on the WBC. One in what, every 4 years? Not that bad. But there are so many elements of DFS that I wish that I had when I was betting on these games. Take, for instance, let's say Chicago Cubs at Milwaukee Brewers tonight. Well, you know, there's a number that we were talking about before the pod where Jimmy Nelson has actually done very well against the Cubs. Well, the over-under in that game is 9 tonight. So taking what I know about Nelson and his history about the Cubs and, you know, Brett Anderson, not the greatest pitcher, but, you know, there's some decent numbers to show you that there could very well be under 9 runs in that game. So it all works out that way. You know, the Cubs, even against the Brewers, they're only -168 favorites in this. That's not a huge line that you could be dealing with. But, you know, in looking at a lot of these, you know, specific numbers, like I feel those specific numbers, again, you know, with the pitchers and the batters, they tend to offer more of how the game's going to go rather than Vegas sometimes in baseball. Especially this early in the season, you know, you could kind of catch Vegas slipping before
that's
they get a hold
exactly
of
what I was about to
of
to
what's going on. Yeah. With this season. So definitely something else you can look at there.
Yeah. Chop hates this, but I don't pay as much attention to the Vegas lines earlier in the season. I mean, I look at them, but I don't really, really like when we get into July, August, we'll really be able to like kind of pick out the discrepancies on what we're thinking should be happening and what Vegas is saying should be happening. And we'll be able to really, really kind of get into that. But it's early in the season, because teams are newer, that we have no idea what's going to really happen. Vegas tends to overreact to some things. So that's something to keep in mind as well. It's a good guide, but it's not the end-all be-all.
All right. Let's get to the next question here. This one's from Fight On 2016. He's the Trojans fella that you always see in the chat there. And I wasn't trying to go down the list of questions, but this one caught my eye as something we should say at the beginning, since it has to do with the beginning. But his question is, what is the first thing that you look at in the morning?
A cup of coffee.
I was about
the mistake
to,
next to me. What? No.
Hey, I love my wife. Thank you
that
very
was
much.
My answer. That
oh, okay.
Apply.
Okay.
What do you guys look at first thing in the morning?
Oh, geez. Well,
when you open up a slate and you're, you know, what?
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought we were going somewhere else with that. I'm like, me, I mean, I've got my wife next to me. Usually it's her, but
You know, I'll go with this since I actually start my research the night before. So, you know, right now I'm doing the notes along with Burns' charts and everything that he's got going on for the analytics quarter. So, yeah, I'm looking at these slates, you know, very, very early on, you know, like basically after first pitch that the slate goes off the night before. So I'm always typing down the pitching matchups. I get a good view of what does it. But for me, you know, what helps me out in every single sport is writing these things down. So, you know, I don't mind having material or notes for each one. That just getting in the process of writing it down just makes me look at it better. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, too, that I do better on days that I, you know, put out material for the Army on days that I don't. So if I'm reliant on a whole bunch of different numbers that I'm just looking at in a glance, that doesn't really work out too well for me. So, you know, especially like last night, one of my main takeaways was that, again, Jimmy Nelson does well against the Cubs. I probably wouldn't have put as much thought into it if I didn't write it down, as I just saw, oh, wow, well, these guys aren't doing too well against Jimmy Nelson. And I might have like a Cubs stack later on that night and just being like, oh, shit, I remember that. But yeah, writing things down certainly works for me. So I don't, you know, maybe that could help somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I go through, I think last year I went through 5 or 6 notebooks, you know, and they're not like 500 page notebooks. So I don't want you to think I'm over here writing novels and everything. And, but like just the little composition notebooks you can get at Walmart. I write those, I use those, and, I love the writing down thing. The first thing that I probably look at is, I write down all the pitchers. I write down basically, especially if it's like a Friday and a lot of these teams are switching series and switching ballparks and stuff, I'll pay a little bit more attention to things as far as who's switching what ballpark, how can this affect their pricing. And this is before I even look at pricing for the next day. And the reason I want to do that is I want to get an idea in my head of, okay, in my opinion, there shouldn't be anybody in the starting lineup going into Denver today that's less than $4,000. And then that way, if something is odd and it hits and there is, then, you know, it stands out a little bit more. So I'll write down basically the team, the pitcher, the handedness of that pitcher, because there are certain teams that we like to target lefties against. There are certain teams we like to target righties against. And then I'll usually write down the Vegas, the lines that we were talking about as well. So I've got all of that in one spot, and I don't have to keep flipping back and forth between screens the rest of the day.
True. Chop, what are you looking at? I mean, besides Chop's Corner.
I do. Well, that's why I like to put that article out so early, is because it allows me to hopefully compile a glance at the slate for everybody else after I've pulled all the other resources together and put them in one place. So what I typically look at is I do the same thing. I get out a notepad and a paper or a pen, and I start writing down what teams are facing what teams. But then I'm going to places where I can see as much as I can in one spot. I look at the Vegas lines first, the money lines and the over-unders. And then after that, I see which pitchers are where. And I'm trying to, because I've already got an idea, I can knock out the top three pitchers just on Vegas alone, the guys that I'm going to be looking at. And then from there, I'm just trying to decide between those guys who has the strikeout upside, who's facing a high strikeout team. And if I can find that all those resources in one spot, I can nail my pitcher that I'm going to go with that day in about 10 or 15 minutes, and then I can be off and running and studying hitters.
Let me ask you guys a question to kind of back up on this and tie it into and tie it into the Vegas lines as well. When you guys are writing down your matchups, because I know I do this, and I wanted to know if it was just me or if it was, you know, if it's something that you guys do as well. So we just pointed out that Max Scherzer line looks a little low going against the Phillies. Do you get an idea in your head as you're saying, okay, Max Scherzer is going against the Phillies, his money line should be like 225? Do you get an idea of that in your head? And then when it's not somewhere around that, does it Does it kind of like stand out to you a little bit?
It's an interesting thought, but I don't like, honestly, no, I don't get that thought. But when I do see that it is that, like for instance, yep. Today, I guess I do it subconsciously, but I, cause somebody already asked the question, like, yo, is Scherzer a great pitcher today? And just, you know, without even thinking about it. Yeah. Against the Phillies. Yeah. He dominates them all the time. Strikes out a whole bunch of them too. And then, you know, you brought up the money line. I was like, ooh, all right, now wait a minute. So, yeah, I get, yeah, without thinking about it, I probably do. Okay.
That's, I do the same thing. I don't go into it with a preconceived thought. I mean, a certain, you know, part of me always does have some ideas, but I'm not trying to, like, pin anything down yet. But when I do look at stuff, because I'm just on autopilot, I'm just writing it down. And as I do, there's inevitably a few things that I react to where I go, ooh. That's interesting. Okay. I didn't expect that.
So even though you're not like consciously writing down what you think it should be and everything, because I don't either, but I do notice that I do it subconsciously as well.
I would say so. I react to it. I definitely react to things like that. Like if I see somebody, oh, good, we got Coors on the slate. Oh, 10.5, that's low. You know, or Scherzer's on this slate, 150, what the hell? You know, I mean, and then it automatically makes me start going, why?
Exactly. Okay. I was wondering. It kind of tied the two together. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to what's a good one here. All right. Let's go from the beginning. Then first, I wanted to say the lineups page, especially the DFSA grid, is the most innovative tool I have ever seen for DFS. This, by the way, is from DJ Miedo. My question centers around stat splits, such as home road splits and handedness splits. Are the pitcher stats on the pitcher's tab their home road splits, or is there overall stats? Also, on the lineups page, are the batter stats displayed by their handedness in reference to the pitcher they are facing that day? I know this is important to notice for reverse split guys. All right, so let's break this question down here.
Let me first interject by saying before we went on the pod, I was grilling Keith over the exact same question. So that's a great question.
All right. So we'll talk about home road splits and I guess handedness on this one. What really stands out to you there?
Okay. So on the actual starting lineups page where it has the lineup, the batting order, the DK and FanDuel price, the WOBA, the ISO, the WRC plus, and the DFS A grade. Those are basically pulled for the handedness of the opponent's pitcher. So, you know, like D. Gordon facing Zach Wheeler, it's going to pull D. Gordon's stats versus right-handed pitching. That's the way it kind of works. Now I know that later on in the game, you know, they could face, you know, D. Gordon could face a lefty. Well, that's great, but you know, more times than not, you know, there aren't a ton of lefty, and we get later on in the year we'll get into, you know, bullpen strategy and stuff like that. But trying to work on the basics right now. I really do pay attention to that because I know for a guarantee that they're going to get one, maybe, or one, if not two, but possibly, hopefully, three at bats against that handedness. Because teams don't like to, if your team's scoring runs, teams don't really like to go lefty righty matchup. They like to kind of save that for when they're in either a neutral or a plus matchup. And I use neutral as down either one or two runs, even, or up a run. Those are the neutral and plus matchups. Usually when a team's getting hammered, they're going to roll a guy out there to take the beating because they don't want to blow through their bullpen. It's just kind of the way that it works. The starting pitcher hub, that is not home road splits. That is, those are basically, because it's more than just one season, I pull in stats from 2015 and on, because it's more than just one season. I do not sort by, you know, what their ERA on the road is versus at home. That is in the works, but it is not, and so is, you know, pitchers versus lefties and pitchers versus righties. But it is not something that I wanted in the first initial release of the lineups page. This is not what the lineups page is going to be all year long. We're going to keep adding to it and making it better, to where it's pretty much a one-stop shop for everything you're going to need. But right now, currently, no. The pitchers are not devised into, you know, splits versus handedness or home and road. But the hitter's statistics that it pulls in on the starting lineup is based on the handedness of the starting pitcher that they're facing.
Okay. There you go.
Fair enough. I mean, that's your baby, so I really don't have any comments towards that. Let's see what else we could do here. All right, he does have a follow-up, so that's cool. That gives us something to talk about, so it's not an awkward silence. Second question for lineup construction and stacking. I know you should stack guys that bat close to each other, but that doesn't always have to be the case. Can you discuss a couple of different strategies for this that have proven to be the most fruitful? Again, I know there aren't any hard and fast rules about this, but I just want to get an idea of your lineup construction strategies.
I would tell you that statistically, if you read a bunch of articles like I tend to do, there's a lot of data saying that if you can get them in consecutive order, your volatility goes up and down a little bit, but your production goes up. So if you can stack 1-2-3 or 4-5-6 or whatever, you're doing better than if you stack 2-4-6 or 1-5-7 or something like that. But that's just like anything. The tighter you stack and the tighter you concentrate those guys, it goes a little bit more towards boom and bust. So stacking, that's where I would go. And I've read a ton of data saying just that. I don't tend to do that as a cash player. I tend to spread it out just a little bit. But, I mean, if I'm trying to win GPPs, I want them all bang, 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 bang right next to each other if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say the Morales Grand Slam was a perfect example of that last night.
Oh, my God. That's,
you know, 2 nights ago. If you had it last night and had a couple of those guys on base with him,
it was 1-2-3-4.
Right? Yeah, you got almost 30 points right there.
That's amazing.
That's just out of Morales. I mean, you got all of the runs and the hits and the way they reached base out of all those other guys. It could have been a 45-point swing for you if you just stacked it up. Now, that doesn't happen as often if you stack the one hitter with the four hitter with the seven hitter, mm-hmm. because there are just too many outs in between for that stuff to really stack up and happen.
Yeah, and there's some creative ways that you could also use. Me and Keith talked about this, I believe the opening day podcast, where we talked about Nori Aoki of the Astros this season, where he's going to be a great guy that's going to get on base, and kind of the way that the Astros use their batting order. Same way that the Cubs do. They have a massive power hitter right there at the top. Now, obviously, Springer is a little more fleet of foot there than Schwarber is, but you can, you know, that's a different way that you can go too, where, you know, even the Astros broadcasters kind of said it. It's like, you know, yeah, Springer is the leadoff hitter, but when they get back down to that nine hole, it kind of, you know, they kind of reverse the order a little bit, and Aoki's going to be getting on base for guys like Springer, you know, Bregman, Altuve, Correa, guys like that. So that's a lower ownership way that you could kind of use, where, you know, instead of going 1-2-3-4 Astros, you can go maybe 9-1-2-4 or something along those lines. You know, there's different ways that you could play with it. Last night with the Diamondbacks, I went 2-4-6 because I know that lefties hammer Samardzija. So I got my exposure to him that way. Of course, Goldschmidt had a homer in there, but so did Peralta and Jake Lamb last night. So, you know, a 2-3-4 stack would have probably been better, but the 2-4-6 was a unique one because nobody had Chris Herman. So there is that to think about as well. Now, it's not always going to work out the way that Chop said, and it's not always going to work out with a 2-4-6, but sometimes, you know, handedness of the guys in the lineup plays a factor into it. And, you know, like if you have a bunch of righties going up against a lefty. For instance, I had, 1-2-4 from the Astros last night. You know, didn't work out as well, but at least I had big right-handed bats going up against the lefty. That was my initial thinking.
Yeah, and I, just to touch up on what these guys said, I kind of agree with a lot of that. I try to find ways to kind of get a little bit of the chalk and a little bit of, you know, I'll stack.
What?
A little bit of the chalk and a little bit of the lower owned players in a stack as well. Because
Mark the tape. I've never heard those words come out of your mouth.
Well, when you've got right now, currently, when you've got guys like Mike Trout and George Springer and Jose Altuve, 60% owned in tournaments, you know, because people are playing the people that they know, and those are your stars of baseball. You know, if you don't have them in, like, you just take Springer last night. He led off the game with a home run. Well, he's 45% owned in my tournaments. And that was in the slam on FanDuel. He might have been even higher than that, actually.
There were 60. I mean, in the 49-mans that I was doing last night, he was 60, which isn't a big shock. But there were other guys who were in GPPs that were talking about Springer being at 60%. So,
you know, I mean, if you don't have – that hurts you bad. That hurts you real bad. It's just like, you know, I was up in the top 100 in the slam most of the night, and then, you know, the Diamondbacks went off. And that – it killed me. It absolutely killed that lineup. But there's going to be nights where the chalk fails. This is baseball. And I talk about it a lot. If there's somebody that I project that's going to be 30% owned or higher, you really have to think about fading him. It's a viable tournament strategy to think about fading him. When we talk about stacks, I love doing a wraparound stack. And I love the fact that managers like Joe Maddon and Bruce Bochy are using pitchers in the eighth spot. So I can go down and I can get a low-owned Joe Panic batting ahead of, you know, Denard Span. Or I can go get a Javier Baez for the Cub batting in front of Schwarber, Bryant, and Rizzo. You know, you can do that and you can really, really, really set yourself apart because Baez has got home run pop as well. Yeah, he might not get, you know, 0.5 as many at-bats as Kyle Schwarber is leading off. But guess what? Schwarber only leads off, you know, the game once. Like, the odds of him leading off another inning are drastically, drastically lower than just leading off the game. So, yeah, he might get more at-bats, but that's over the course of the season. I'm looking at that day, that day's situation. How can I attack it, and how can I be different in tournaments? So,
well, that was what I was going to tell you. That's obviously when you're talking about trying to be different, trying to be unique. Those are GPP concepts, and rightfully so. There's an article that I wrote recently that talked about why. So go look it up. But the point is. When I'm telling everybody listening to go look at it, I can't even tell you the name of the title of it right now, but it's in there. It's recent, whatever. But as a cash mindset, one thing that I'm emphasizing this year very, very heavily is top of the order stuff. So when it comes to stacking, first of all, in cash, we don't stack a lot. 2-3 hitters, basically tops. I'm not running 4-man stacks in cash because I subject myself.
Coors Field, right?
Even then. Only because you just can't run the risk. You just can't run the risk of that game falling somewhat flat. And that's the real issue. But the other part of that is focusing on the top part of the lineup, the 1-4, 1-5 hitters. And the reason why is your number one hitter, your leadoff hitter, is going to get the most at-bats in that game. He may be tied with some other people, but he's going to get the most. And across a season, he's going to get the most at-bats. You need those at-bats. for every slot you drop from the two-hole to the three-hole to the four-hole, you get 11% less at-bats per slot you drop. So the difference between the one-hole hitter and the nine-hole hitter is huge. It doesn't mean that the guy can't produce out of the nine. It means that for cash games, when I'm focused on getting as much opportunity, basketball term, that I can possibly get in minutes, all that stuff to produce, opportunities to produce, I need as many chances at that pitcher as I can get. And so over the course of a week, a month, a year, it starts to pay off. Now, any given night, who knows? We've all had nights where the eight-hole guy goes double dong and, you know, me in a cash game. The guy was never even on my radar. So yeah,
Bonnie Soto.
I have to.
I was just going to say.
Soto. Sandy Leon has done it in the nine. Yeah. These are guys that are not double dong, but he's hit some. These are guys that are not on my radar as a cash guy very often because I'm very, very focused on top of the order guys.
Unless now, I tell again, you that he's in an amazing spot and you need to play him and then you still don't.
But that's because I hang on every word you say, Keith.
You should. I just don't spit out nuggets just to
Keith is the only one selling water in the village.
That's right. If he tells me to leave my wife tomorrow, the bitch is gone.
I wouldn't do that because I love your wife. She's awesome.
And there was an interesting, even a kind of a follow-up that happened in that discussion, but, you know, the whole thing with chalk and everything like that, that's still something that kind of haunts you. And, yeah, I saw it on opening day where I was up around the top and, you know, Mike Trout hits that homer and it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, my night's over. And then Chris Davis, you know, comes back for that second dong of the night. I mean, that was just a remarkable swing of events that all happened that night. But, yeah, more so than any other sport, you know, if you're not on the chalk bat or whatever, be prepared to see your lineups just fly down the leaderboards. It's truly a remarkable thing that does not happen in any other sport.
Yeah, and
that's baseball, though.
But there's also, you know, there's more, you know, argument for getting off of it. You know?
Absolutely.
We're talking about Hall of Fame players that fail 7 out of 10 times. You know, Mike Trout, you could pay $5,000 for, and he's going to, you know, he could go bananas. But I can also play 22 for Giovanni Soto, and he can outscore him any night of the week. You know, just because a guy's chalk in cash games, you know, don't worry about so much about the guy being so highly owned that you have to get off of him. You know,
absolutely.
That's
absolutely correct.
That's why I was saying, you know, the only way I would really, if I played cash, the only way I would really, really consider stacking in cash is on slates where Coors is, because of the fact that, you know, we know what Coors has the ability to do, and everybody and their brother is going to be on everybody in Coors. So if it does flop, it doesn't hurt you as much. Let's go 4v4, and I'll beat you there.
As long as the rest of your guys do better than the rest of mine.
That's what I'm saying. So that way, that way, I hate playing 4v4, 2v2 head to heads, don't get me wrong, or even cash games, but that's where, in my opinion, that's the only situation I would really think about, you know, playing a Blackman Arenado Cargo or a Cargo Story, you know, Arenado. And then backing it up with, you know, like today, a Puig and a Franklin Gutierrez or whatever it is, just because of the fact that, yeah, that game has a 12-run total. That game's probably going to see some fireworks. But here's the thing. Everybody's going to be on them. So if it doesn't, and say, you know, it just ends up being a 6-5 game, you know, which is 12 runs, but that's not why you stack Coors Field. You stack Coors Field because it can go for 15 to 10, you know. But I feel like maybe not currently, but here in about a month, you're going to feel confident enough to where even if I do play four or five guys out of that one game, which isn't recommended if Coors isn't on the slate, I'm not going to have to worry about it because I have enough confidence in what, you know, me and Chop and Al and Burns and all of us are putting, and David, can't forget about David, have been putting out and what we've been teaching you, that I can beat, you know, more than 50% of the field more nights than not with that information, even if Coors doesn't perform.
Can I offer a follow-up tip to what you guys are talking about just before we move to the next question here? The way you hear me talk a lot, where my evolution as a DFS player is going now is very much into contest selection and what are the best spots to be in that give me the most upside and the most safety at the same time. And it lands me squarely out of the 50,000 entry tournaments, the Millie Makers and stuff like that, which that's catching on, you know, industry-wide, sort of. People are still doing it, but people are saying it's a lotto ticket, you know, your odds are small, blah, blah, blah. We all know that. I don't want the 50-50s either, especially in baseball. To me, baseball is built for contrarianism. Baseball is the worst cash game sport there is because of its inconsistency. However, if you build your lineups, if you construct your lineups with the mindset of, I'm not going to take a lot of risk, but I'm going to try and build a top 10% lineup consistently. I don't need it to be a top 0.0001% Millie Maker lineup and take all those unnecessary risks. I'm trying to beat 100 and 200 man events. If I can beat those, that lineup demolishes cash. You can enter it in 50-50s and it kills. You're not taking so much risk that you're being stupid to play it in a 50-50. If I lined up a five-man stack on DraftKings with a three-man stack and whatever, then I'm taking a lot of risk on a 10-game slate where I'm pinning down two teams very, very heavily. I'm taking a lot of risk. And that's set for GPPs, big GPPs, where it needs to be perfect to win. However, if I'm doing little 100-man tournaments, I can win those with cash games. I win them in NFL all the time. I win them in the NBA. I win them with cash lineups all the time. So you focus a little bit on your upside. You kind of adhere to the rules of don't stack more than about three, to maybe, you know, take a couple of different three or four different offenses, not just one or two that you focus on, and then attack it that way. And when you hit your, if you get to where you consistently are in, say, the top 15 or 20 players of a 100-man contest, you're destroying every cash game you enter.
There you go.
All right, let's get to
food for thought. Food for thought.
All right, let's talk about, let's see, we got a couple here. Let's go back to the lineup tool. So, how do we use, now this is just from an unnamed source, so this guy skates off free without letting the people know who it is.
Anonymous says.
Yes. How do we use the DFSA grade? Can it be a standalone thing, or are we supposed to use it with other things?
This Keith? Is a good question. This is a really good question.
You're the one putting the model together. You're the best person to ask. I will tell people I can use it as a standalone. If I know which players have history and which players have, you know, small sample sizes, I can use it as a standalone tool, and that could be the only thing I look at. I like it. I trust it.
Yeah, see.
Shoot me down.
No, you can't. You can. Okay. To start, I don't want it. I don't want people to take it for gospel. Okay.
This is like asking a Republican if he's pro-life.
Because, you know, it is baseball. It is a very volatile sport. So, you know, what's made it look so good, you know, so far is the fact that Giovanni Soto was the highest ranked catcher yesterday, or the second highest ranked, right behind Posey, I believe it was, or somebody else. You know, Wilmer Flores was by far and away the best player on the board. He wasn't the highest scoring, though, but you got him at under 10% with that grade based off of what it was. Matt Kemp was highly rated. He was under 15%. He went double dong. you know, you can use it as a standalone. I know Tex was saying this morning he's used it as a standalone on DraftKings, and it's put up 120 and cashed every single night. Now, with that said, everybody goes through hot and cold streaks just like this will, but it does not take into account salary. It does not take into account ballpark or the quality of the pitcher it's facing currently. Ballpark will be next. Then the quality of the pitcher it's facing will be the one at, will be the adjustment afterwards. So it should be getting better. But it gives you a very, very good idea of, you know, players being in good spots, possibly that you would not even think of. I'm looking at a guy right now. Jorge Polanco for the Twins has the highest grade on the Twins against Derek Holland and the White Sox tonight. That's higher than Robbie Grossman and Brian Dozier.
Wow. Should be a lot of high grades on that Twins team tonight, huh?
you know, so it's it does help you identify, you know, really good matchups, which is what it's designed to do. I screamed for half of a season last year. You know, we need to figure out a way to identify without it, just in a single binary number, when players are in good matchups. Because I believe that baseball is more matchup driven than any other sport. Just because it's a team game, yes, but it's a bunch of one-on-one individual matchups within that team game.
It's like the Ryder Cup.
Exactly. That's a very, very, very good explanation.
That's what I do.
You know, if it's something to put in your toolbox. I don't mind you using it as you learn what is going on. You know, I don't mind you using it as a standalone. But eventually I'd like you to also incorporate other things into it as well. But while you're learning, and I still use it, you know, and I know I baseball.
I do it the reverse. I incorporate other things to put me on players, and then I go to the lineups tool to verify that I'm on the right train of thought and to maybe find stuff I missed and then reevaluate.
Yep. And there's a couple.
Yeah, I look at other stuff because I know that the lineup tool is always changing and that score is going to be always changing and evolving, you know, for the next couple of months. But yes, I trust it.
Yeah. And there's a, you know, a couple. New additions even to today's. You're going to be able to see where the lineups grade based on as far as conditional formatting, based on the pitcher that they're facing. So you can know that the Cardinals are kind of middle of the pack in according to the rest of the slate versus a rookie pitcher who I don't know how to pronounce his first name. You can see that the White Sox versus are rated as an overall offense and lineup that they put out. They're rated towards the bottom today, just, you know, based on, instead of having to go back and say, okay, they have a 309 wOBA, they have a 366, they have it, you know, you're going to be able to see the colors. And the same goes with the pitchers today without having to switch over to the starting pitcher tab. So I did figure out how to conditional format without doing cells in succession. So, Jamie.
All right. All right. There are a couple questions here. There's two that I found very, not to say that these two I'm going to talk about are not interesting, but I thought that these two could be combined here, sort of. Because
you're driving, you know, this train. Lead us, brother.
We're picking. All right. Yeah, I don't have to explain shit to you guys. You can answer the damn questions. All right. All right. So, one, the first one comes from our buddy Nate. He says, this is year one of MLB DFS for me. I like stacking when it comes to MLB. Is it better to concentrate on two specific teams in a slate with teams playing one another, or is it better to just stack two from a team? What is your preference?
We got that one question, and then it kind of this kind of is in terms of team selection, but when to pay up for a pitcher? Do you always pay up in cash for a pitcher? So let's talk about the first one there with stacking of who we talked a little bit about stacking on one team before, but let's talk about stacking from a whole game entirely. Is that something that you guys like to do?
In tournaments, yes. And it depends on who the pitchers are, obviously.
Yeah.
And you know, you can add in if they're in, a stadium like Chase or Coors or, Nationals Park, Camden Yards, Rogers Center, stuff like that. Then, Philly is another one. Cincinnati, those, yes.
Yeah.
If it's conducive, then yes. I don't mind game stacking. I like to kind of, especially since I make multiple lineups, I make more lineups in baseball than I do in any other sport. I tend to really, really, really kind of try to allow players to play off of each other or lineups to play off each other. So, like, if I have a Rocky stack in one lineup, I'll throw a Dodgers stack in another one. If I've got a Philly stack, I'll go with a Cincinnati stack, and then I'll combine them. And then, there's multiple different ways to do it. So I don't mind game stacking. I don't really do a lot of 4v4 stacks on FanDuel, just because if I really like a stack, I'll put it in its own separate lineup, and then I'll try to build off of good plays around it. I'll go a 4-2-2, or I'll stuff like that. But it all depends on lineups and who comes out and where they're hitting and what their prices are and stuff like that. So it does depend. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, I think, but game stacking is a viable strategy, in my opinion.
I'll allow your cop-out answer in this scenario.
Chop, any thoughts here?
I was going to cop out and say...
I'll allow it as well.
But I think I'm going to change the terminology a little bit and say it's completely slate-dependent. Okay. Here's why. I mean, I can do this in 10 seconds. When I am looking at offenses to stack or to take multiple hitters from, I'm looking at Vegas scores, and I'm targeting who has the implied totals, who has the highest run score. And I go down that list. Priority number one is the top score of the night. Priority number two is the second highest. Priority number three. And I try to stay, like I said, 1 through 5 in the order. And if it happens to be LA and Colorado, so be it. I don't intentionally do it.
All right. Well, let's talk about the second part of that that I mentioned here. This one coming from Wildcat wide receiver comes out at Wildcat WR.
Did you miss the second part to his question?
No.
When to pay up for pitchers?
Okay. Yeah, when to pay. Yeah, this is what I was talking about here.
Oh, my bad.
I just forgot to mention his name on the first go around. But when to pay up for pitchers? Always pay up for cash. I don't know, like. I'll take the lead on this one, but I think it's a very interesting thing. I guess, I never play cash, but yeah, I would assume, a guy like a Kershaw or something like that, something where you're probably going to get the most amount of points. It makes sense from that perspective. But, I mean, we've seen time and time again where, the cheaper pitcher ends up being the guy. And in more cases than not, it's typically in starts against the Padres or the Brewers or the Phillies or something like that. So those long shot ones obviously reserved for GPPs. But I know Chop's our cash guy here, but I'm sure he'll just echo what I said there.
Pretty much. I would say generally, yes, there's safety with paying up for pitcher in cash, but it's not always foolproof. There was a spot I put in Chin Music today that I can't believe I was recommending it, but who's in Kansas City? Who's the KC pitcher?
Vargas tonight?
For some reason, I kind of like the guy. He's $6,000.
Okay.
I don't ever pay down for pitching, but you know what? Sometimes I do.
All right.
You know, yeah. 80% of the time, I'm taking one of the top three salary guys, but 20% of the time, somebody else just stands out better. They feel safer. Vegas supports them. They're in a good park. They've got strikeout upside, and I can't find any other team that has, you know, that strikes out less or more or whatever. So they just end up being the one that I look at.
Yeah, tonight's an interesting night because we got all the number fives going from pretty much every rotation, so you're not going to get that kind of safety.
Some of them.
Well, most. But like even tonight's slate, I believe the most expensive pitcher is Francisco Liriano at 8,000 on FanDuel. I mean, he's got a great matchup against the Rays tonight, so that's probably going to be where the masses go tonight. But,
correct.
You know,
but. You know, but who would you rather have, Vargas for $2,900 cheaper or Liriano, the old man?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough because Liriano's looked pretty good in spring here. I know it's spring, but, you know, I've agreed some things, and he looks a lot different. People noticed a huge change in him. And against the Rays, I'll pretty much take that chance more often than
they
not.
Do strike out a lot. Can we say it's maybe a little bit of a toss-up, though, to where it's not like a landslide lock?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now the $2,900 becomes in play, the savings. What can I get when I build a lineup with that extra $2,900? And do I like it better than no more safety out of Liriano? That's when you'll see a cash game guy like me pay down at pitcher.
Yeah. Screw when you guys. I'm just running a lineup out there with Kyle Freeland at 4K on DraftKings.
Have fun.
Here's the thing. Is I think this is a good topic because we're about to have two worlds collide with Mr. Chop this weekend. The Dodgers are coming to Denver. Clayton Kershaw is probably starting tomorrow, if not Sunday.
Let's just set Chop up like a stack of dominoes.
And I like it. In the first.
Hello.
I'm here.
Oh, I'm here. I had the mute. My bad. The Jackie Bradley Jr. keeps flopping around, and I got to mute every time I'm not talking. That's the dog, by the way, not the right fielder, center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. He's not in my upstairs study. But
I wasn't aware of that. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's a big, floppy, long-haired Dotson, so... this should be interesting nonetheless to see what happens. Last night, you know, you didn't have the greatest pitchers in the greatest situation, but it ended up being Stroman who was the best pitcher of the night. He had the best matchup, ended up getting a little more strikeouts than I thought he would have. When in fact, Robbie Ray was the guy I thought was going to have it. He was one pitch away last night from having just a little bit better of a night than Stroman. He misses a pitch by like a millimeter down the zone. Hunter Pence. Now, by the way, that strikeout gets him the complete win, and the Diamondbacks come up the next inning and hit the 3-run homer, which would have given him the win. So instead of having 45 points last night for getting the quality start, the win. At bat against Posey, Pence ends up taking second on a ball that barely gets away from the catcher. I believe two pitches later, Posey hits the double down the line. Giants take the lead, and then you know you see Ray leave the game. He falls, one out shy of the quality start. So things like that will happen in baseball, and they could absolutely turn your night upside down. That one pitch right there was the reason that I didn't cash, as opposed to not being a millionaire, but having a smile on my face.
Oh, Chop, that Dodgers lineup just came out, what we were talking about. Yeah, he's in second.
Order?
Yeah. And Peterson is in the lineup. He's batting eighth, but you have Kiki at 2.9, and they threw another wrinkle. Scott Van Slyke, who also crushes left-handed pitching, is
good God
at 2.6 in the cleanup spot, or in the five spot.
That's just putting the worm on the hook.
Is that Juschler Hernandez down there at the seven hole?
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I just like saying that. I think it's hysterical.
And when you hear his bitch about
you guys are on a first name basis. You guys are still in a more formal relationship. We're more casual. Me and Kiki get along great.
Yeah. I love Kiki, especially against Mad Bum.
We talk at Thanksgiving all the time. Well, I'm sorry. He celebrates Boxing Day. My bad.
I love Kiki, especially against the...
They're cheap Dodgers for Coors.
Yeah.
That's scary. That commands your attention. And that game goes off in what? 20 minutes? Or not the game, but I mean the lineup.
3 hours.
No, it's like 3 hours.
Doesn't the lineup lock in like 20 minutes?
Yeah, but
if you're not late swap.
Yeah, you've got late swap, so.
All right. No, never mind. Let's table that.
Yes. All right. We've got two more questions to get to. I think both are pretty, both very interesting. But since we're talking about it, we got a little bit of a day slate here. Let's get to this one first and save the best for last. But, all right. This unnamed folk says, messed around with MLB last year, so I'm still new to it. When looking for hitters in the day slate, what are we looking for? What stats, history versus the pitcher, stadium, weather? There are so many stats in baseball. Are there like three that we should focus on? I'm killing pitcher picks, but I'm missing my hitters. I never seem to get that one-off guy. For one, this is interesting.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. So for the day games, right? Not last year, you know, since I was doing more for the Army, but the year before, for day games, and this is when I was working my old job too, I would actually go in and pull up the day numbers for everybody and see who had the best day numbers. There were times that it worked, times that it didn't, because you don't get the full scope of everything, but it was something that I did. I had the time to do it, and I went and checked it, and it worked a little bit. That could have just been dumb luck, but I mean, maybe that's something you could do. I would focus more on the handedness versus the pitcher, numbers versus that team, numbers in that stadium, things like that, as opposed to just doing with, you know, the day games. I think I just got dumb luck on that.
I think there is a little bit of credence to at least looking at it. There are, I think, and I could be completely wrong, but I want to say Mark Grace was like a career 182 hitter, you know, in late afternoon games, like twilight games, like Saturday afternoons. But, you know, it's just there are some that just crush at home, or not at home during the day. There are others that don't. And for whatever reason, whether that be batting eye, whether that be whatever it is, they just don't crush at home or during the day. I think
what you can find out who the true alcoholics of the group are.
Yeah, I mean,
and they are in a city for 3 days.
I like to use it as another tool. It's obviously not, you know, the end all be all, but you know, if a guy, you know, has if a guy in August is hitting, you know, 289, but in his day games this year he's batted and it's, you know, more than like two, he's hit like 355 and he's probably going to be low owned. Yeah, I mean, I'll pay attention to that a little bit, but it's one of the last things that I really do pay attention to. You know, it is a thing. Seeing the ball during the day, especially when you have teams other than the Cubs who don't play a ton of day games, seeing the ball at night is just more comfortable to a lot of them, because a lot of these teams outside Chicago, they play a lot of night games, the vast majority of them. So to see, like, you know, an Adrian Gonzalez who, you know, probably hits like 450 during the day, I think it was what it was last time I checked, you know, that does kind of stand out a little bit.
Chop, feelings, thoughts?
I asked myself a couple of questions. When I got day games, I asked myself a couple of questions. Are the players in the lineup, who is old and who's the catcher? And the follow-up to that is, did they play the night before?
What do you mean by who is old and who the catcher is? I'm intrigued by this.
Okay. Because if you're an old dude, you need rest and recovery. If you're a catcher, you need rest and recovery. And if you played the night before and then you're going to tee it up again at noon the next day, a lot of times that's when the coach is going to put your backup in.
Okay, yeah. So Catchers usually don't catch day games after night games unless your name is Yadier Molina.
Correct. So if you are a if you're a non late swap guy, you know, if your lineup locks or and which I don't think if it's a slate like today where Colorado's one of the later games of the day slate, I don't think that late swap is a really massive advantage to have today because it just it kind of is what it is. By the time you get to that game and get the information that you want, all the other games are locked up. You can't do anything with it. So that's something to think about going forward. Especially as the season gets older. Right now, maybe not quite a big deal, but those managers do look for opportunities to get their, you know, catchers and their older veteran players a little bit more rest, like that extra day and a half when they can. So yeah, that's an opportunity where you could put a guy in there. Oh, my God, he's in a great spot. He's in Coors Field. And next thing you know, what the hell, he got benched? Why? Well, because he played last night and it was a 12-inning game. That's why.
Yeah, and when we do the breakdowns, we point out a lot of that stuff. Normally, sure. You won't see, you know, catchers. They normally won't catch day games after night games. You know, if a guy's played four games that week, usually on – and you see a lot of this on Sundays. We call Sunday the B-League teams. You'll yep. usually see a lot of the you know, role players, the bench players get a lot of run on
– yep, that's also – that's also when you'll see a normal eight-hole hitter slide up to the leadoff spot.
Yeah, well, if your manager is Mike Matheny, then you see that all the time. So,
well, true. But that provides value. That's something to look for.
Actually, Chop's manager is Mike Matheny. So
I know. That's what I'm saying.
That's why he threw that out there. Come on, Al. Come on.
No. I thought he was just being a smartass and then just being like, it is.
No.
All right. You know what? We're on two different playing fields. All right. Let's just get to the last question of the day here. I thought this was the best one, and we don't even know who the hell it came from. So maybe they could let us know afterwards. But when first starting out playing MLB DFS, what was your biggest mistake, and what did you do to overcome it?
I actually do know who that one is. That's from Fight On.
Okay.
And that's
wait. Were like all of these unnamed ones from him?
Well.
Because like there's like eight that don't have a name.
Yeah, he sent them to me in a direct message. So gotcha. Like he had the how do we use the DFS grade? What was the first thing you look at in the morning when stacking GPPs? So it's got like his and then it's grouped and then his and then the next one and it's grouped. So
gotcha. All right. So yeah, he was just hogging up the town hall meeting. Gotcha.
hey, at least we got questions.
That is true.
Yes.
We didn't have to make any up like the other time.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just kidding. We never did that.
12 against Hinjin Ryu. Or he's 5-10 against Hinjin Ryu.
All right. What was the question again?
What's our biggest mistake when starting out in DFS and why?
And what did you do to overcome it?
Yeah, that too.
DFS baseball or DFS in general?
We're going to go DFS baseball.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what mine was. Mine was thinking that since I watched baseball my whole life, that I could just come in and absolutely dominate. And since I am a Rockies fan, I had an advantage over everybody when it came to, you know, playing Coors Field, which now I think I do, but I didn't then. And it was also, and I think this is still even a mistake now. I'll catch myself at times, blindly playing Rockies because I know them. I know what they're capable of doing.
Yep.
And not really, really looking at the numbers. And I have to force myself to fade the Rockies at times. So what I started doing last year, that was the first year, almost every night I had a Rocky in my lineup and like it would work at times and it wouldn't work at times. So what I started doing last year was no matter what, I had a Rocky stack in a lineup. You know, just so that if they went off, I didn't feel like I missed something. whether that be a $5, you know, rally game, or, you know, a $3 or squeeze game or whatever. But no matter what, I had at least one Rockies stack. And then I would build the rest of my lineups how I needed to see fit. So that's kind of how I overcame that. That was probably my biggest mistake, and it cost me, God, it cost me thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I would do that a lot, and I remember specifically me and Chop did a podcast where it was just us two last year, and I believe it was on the day of a Cardinals-Phillies game, and I think we both took players from each team, and they both went off, which was kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, I would play a ton of Phillies. I would play when I first started. I would play a ton of Mets, ton of Yankees, because they were in the market and I could watch the games. And I thought that was awesome. If I had like Brett Gardner and he hit a home run, I thought I was the coolest guy in the world. And then, you know, 10 o'clock would come around and he'd be the only one with the hit. You know, and that would kind of suck. I think. Also, too, when I first started playing, I went right into the, you know, I think baseball was the – I started playing basketball before anything else. But, you know, you see the commercials on TV. You think you could win $1 million in one shot. You put $1 in on these huge tournaments. So I guess just, you know, long story short, bankroll management was something that I didn't even think about. And, you know, I was just going for the gusto right off the bat. Chop?
I wrote down – what I thought my biggest mistake was, which was playing exclusively cash games in baseball with no upside to make up for the volatility of the game.
Yeah.
When you're playing just 50-50s, because you just want to win. I just want to win today. I just want to say that I won something today. Then you're going to load up on those cash games. And if you don't have a couple of tournaments, you're going to see a night where you score a 200 and you're going to kick yourself. Because if you're only winning at a 40% clip, you're not beating the rake, it may take all season long, it's eventually going to grind your bankroll down no matter how well you manage it. You still need upside into, you know, some of those 100-man leagues or small tournaments or whatever, so that when you do hit a really, really good lineup that you did not expect, it pays you off and makes up for the last 2 weeks of shit you just suffered through. And baseball is going to do that to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, from one day to the next, you could just, you know, you could have such a great night and then all of a sudden just fall right off the cliff. It, you know, the things that we have going on with Keith's lineup page and what me and Burns are doing, you know, we're trying to cut down on all that because matchups are so damn important to this sport. But, you know, I've lost this season, at least it's been extremely close to being on the cash line, you know, and the nights that I won, I did very well. So I'm very happy with the process that I have going on. And, you know, all the listeners out there too, if you got a process that you feel comfortable with, that's working for you. We had our boy Sean Black hit for 400 yesterday on $1. I mean, yep. whatever you did to get you that, what is that, like a 40,000% ROI investment? You know, do that. You know, do the same exact thing. Whatever you used, whether it was the lineups page or the analytics or whatever it was, do that again and keep doing it until it doesn't work anymore. So just being comfortable in your own skin in baseball is quite important.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to, you know, keep learning and incorporate things. That I think that's the biggest thing. I still don't ever stop learning. You know, you
play other sports too.
Go golf.
Play other sports.
Baseball.
No, I don't mean just that. Play other sports too. It will make your overall DFS game better.
Yeah, baseball is a great sport in my opinion, because it allows your personality to come out. You know, I can get contrarian on my stacks and, you know, it pays off. And it's going to pay off just as much as, you know, playing nothing but chalk, is going to do as well. I remember there was a time last year where, I was getting Rangers stacks at home. At like, I think the highest was like at 4.5%. And I was just, I crushed it for a week just basically by playing the Rangers. There are different ways to attack it, but you have to really, really, really kind of be able to take the variance in it. We talked a lot about it last year. Break these slates up as far as, you know, in the afternoon and then the day and then the express and the turbos, the after hours, you know, the late nights, whatever. But also view it as a series. So like today's a Friday. Okay. I don't play on Sundays. I just don't do it. Not in baseball.
I do. Don't worry. I'll help you guys out.
Yeah, I'll
make a lineup on my phone from the damn golf course. So.
The lineups page is all out on Sundays. But like, so I break it up like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like, so I just want to win the series. You know, like a Major League Baseball team goes in, they go into a state or a city, they want to win the series. If I win more series than I lose playing around the same dollar amount, then I'm going to be good to go. You know, I'm not going to win, you know, $5,000 on Monday and then go play $2,000 of it the next day when I only played, you know, $800 on that Monday to win the $5,000. I'm going to play $800, $800, $800. And give myself either the chance to win or lose.
Yeah. Knock two zeros off that and you're at my level.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a better man than I, because as recording artist Drake once said, I spin it before I get it.
It's just, you know, set yourself up for every 3 days. Every 3 days. And guys, you have to take days off in baseball. It is a grind. It is a grind, okay?
And Cal Ripken Jr., Roger Maris.
We're not trying to scare you. We're trying to be realistic. You know. So if you're going to say, okay, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm going to allow myself $150. That is what I'm going to play. I'm going to split it up 50-50-50, okay? I don't care if I win $50,000. I don't care if I win $5. I'm only playing $50 for these 3 days. And then at the end of the 3 days, reevaluate and decide what you want to play the next 3 days. Okay, but don't let it fluctuate up and down every single day, because you're not going to give yourself a true idea of what your skill level is. Because you're going to go on week-long cold slumps. I promise you.
Week-long.
You're going to go on 2-week-longs, you know, where you only, you know, you might win one day. You might profit one day out of the 2 weeks, and it's going to get frustrating. But what you have to do is you have to make sure that when you are losing those consecutive days, that you're not chasing. You can go bust a lot quicker in baseball trying to chase than you can in any other sport, in my opinion.
Yes, indeed.
I've done it. That's how I lost $16,000 in August.
All right. We all done here?
Yeah.
All right. Chop, any closing words? Keith, any closing words?
Oh, I hung up a while ago. Sorry, guys.
Oh, yeah. No problem. I mean,
Keith,
I figured
Keith thoughts. No, I don't. No, this was fun, guys. Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I like it, too. It's good to get back to the basics and all that. So, very cool. And, again, if you like what you heard and you're not a member with us, make sure you do so. DFSNormie.com. Use that promo code opening day to get yourself 7 free days to see if you like what's going on here. If not, well, screw you. We don't need you. I kid. Kind of. But we'd love to have you. It'd be great to have more members. We're going to have a lot of fun this summer and just keep this on rolling right on into the NBA playoffs and then right back to NFL, where our head honcho in charge, Kevin, the DFS Army commander, will lead us through the gridiron. So should be a good next couple months here. And, of course, we'd love to have you. Again, DFSArmy.com, promo code opening day. We'll be back on Monday with you with another podcast For me, Keith, Chop, and the rest of the DFS Army, we gone.
Peace. Peace out.